What up, though? Big Boss Filmworks presents Motown Mafia Podcast with your host, Courtney Brown Jr., and yours truly, Big Lou Stevens. We chop it up about everything from the street corner to Wall Street and beyond. The struggle is real and the struggle is relative. Let's get into it.
Family, it is your man, CRB Jr. We are here again at Motown Mafia Podcast, a Big Boss Filmworks production. To my left is my guy, my friend, and my business partner, Brother Lou. What's happening, baby?
What it do, man?
It is what it is. Everybody good in your world?
Everybody's good, man. It's things are starting to really coast.
They coast. We just got a bunch of hot stuff. Our man, shout out to Al Prophet and American Dope. Al was just in town.
Oh, yeah.
Check out some of his stuff on American Dope. We did. We got some stuff also that we're going to be doing the posting that we did with Al.
Yeah, we got some of his stuff as well.
So we're loaded. Yeah, we got a lot of stuff coming. You people who do not know, we also have a sister channel or a baby channel. The Diaspora Plug, which we sometimes do some more of our intellectual or business related, still got that Big Boss flavor to it and stuff. So check out the Diaspora Plug TV, a Big Boss affiliated station. So, man, let's get to it.
Yeah, man. And we're talking about, right now, we're about to talk about doo-wop.
We're going to talk about doo-wop. We're going to talk about the legend of Mr. B.
Okay.
We're going to talk about, they just came out with a new list. You know, it's the year end, a list of all the black billionaires or those close to being billionaires.
I'm talking about.
There was one that's in the honorable mention category that's really worth, and I'll just give you a hint. You can do well for yourself after you stop being president. Unbelievable.
Really?
We'll get to that. Yeah, blew my mind at the end of the, we're going to do the whole breakdown. But then they had a list, and it was two people.
Mm-hmm.
Coming to America.
Okay.
Went to the bank. And there's a reason why Michelle and them ain't got no time to be worried about that they doing better now. They got a lot of coochie sweaters
now.
Yeah, they do it. They paid off their student loans.
No.
Yeah, they gave in the office still owing student loans. Not no more.
No, man.
And then we're going to talk about some interesting thing that I actually did see. You know, I'm not going to hate, even though we come for you, Vlad. We come for you. But saw a great interview on Vlad, one of the founders of FUBU, and he was talking about his spending habits when they hit that lick. And it just reminded us of the brothers from our orbit sometimes, how we behave once we get that bag, right?
Yeah,
right.
Man.
But, we're going to start off with, we're here in Detroit, home of that infamous and now famous street organization known as YBI, a acronym for Young Boys Incorporated.
Right.
Shout out to all those guys. RIP to Brett. Shout out to Mr. Cooper, a.k.a. Pep. Shout out to Big Five, Brother Steve. Still looking for you brothers to come in. Shout out to Brother who got another show here in the city. Shout out to Chestnut.
Okay.
Shout out to all those guys, man, all those YBI guys. There was always a lot of street politics involved in that situation, but, I've been the voice of reason. Those guys' place in Detroit street lore cannot be denied.
Yeah, without question.
And those would be the guys in that circle that we were friends with and had good times with, and those that my friend and my brother Eddie did business with, and then through him I got to be their acquaintance, and then even the guys on the other side of the street, because we all middle-aged men now, and we a lot of time has passed. So shout out to all those guys. But with that said about YBI, in doing our research of this and trying to give these street legends their flowers,
okay,
or put some things in some historical context, and needless to say, with the success of the BMF show, and there's about to be a BMF documentary. You got three different projects that we spoke about that are about to come out on Kenneth Supreme McGriff and the Supreme team. As this street thing and hustler stories become so mainstream, obviously some of the people in the other cultures and communities, they got bigger microphones than us. And then they start telling the story their way.
Right.
And a lot of the characters who should be mentioned don't get mentioned.
Yeah, absolutely. We've seen movies in the past 5 years. Well, a little bit longer than 5 years. In the past 10 years, within us doing our thing here, that had a lot of inaccuracies.
A lot of inaccuracies. I mean, and again, you know, we did a post a while ago and kind of roasted the White Boy Rick movie. But shout out to White Boy Rick, to Rick Wershing.
Yeah, man.
You know, we actually carry, or used to carry, he's transitioning companies. He's in the cannabis business now. We actually carry his product at
the dispensary. What's it called, the Eighth?
It's called the Eighth. Yep, the Eighth's by the Eighth's about the Eighth Amendment. And did good, did very well. And he's doing well and doing a lot of positive things. But yeah, they completely just destroyed a movie about his life. And it was, I mean, a story. Yeah. I mean, you had a shout out to the Curry Boys, Big Man, Little Man, all them. I mean, it was a story, just a classic story. But, you know, they tell the White Boy Rick story. They don't mention Maserati Rick. They don't mention Best Friends. They don't mention Demetrius Holloway.
And the problem with these movies, especially about our thing here, is these stories don't happen in a vacuum. You know, there's no inclusion, none. It's just, okay, this is the White Boy Rick story, and then they throw a few names out and, you know, give it a little, you know, sprinkle a little bit of.
I mean, and I love what they're doing with Stars, and definitely shout out to Meech. He'll be, you know, may he get home soon. Shout out to T, who is home.
Yeah.
Shout out to the whole BMF family. But, you know, they throw Eminem in playing White Boy Rick in, like, episode three.
Right. They did something. I think they digitally de-aged him or something like that and had him in it for a hot second.
And I get it. They're doing BMF. It's Detroit. It's a hustle. It's a street TV series. You got to throw in. But to throw White Boy Rick into that episode with no context.
Right.
It was
a disservice.
It was a disservice. And I get it. Again, I ain't mad at them at all.
It's fan service is what they call it.
There you go. But, and shout out to Dame Dash and those guys. I believe they're working on the Paid in Full too. Because what Dame did when he did Paid in Full was he brought, which was an urban legend in our community, to the big screen and let the legend and the tragedy of that whole Alpo, AZ, Rich Porter thing, you know, at least allow our community to have a point of reference to talk about this kind of thing. And if you guys have not read, it's at my house. Great book also on that era is called The Crack Era from the big homie Kevin Childs.
Kevin Childs book.
Yeah, if you guys have not read that and you're into this kind of thing, do yourself a favor and get The Crack Era by the homie Kevin Childs. With that said, though, he mentions these guys in his book, but I went and I viewed some, you know, more documentaries and things on them. And I was not, I'll be honest, I was not that familiar. I had heard in casual in my time in New York, you would hear the names, but I really didn't. And the name is a brother named, and both of these guys are actually RIP, I believe. Doo-Wop in L.A.
Okay.
They were closely associated and childhood friends with Rich Porter from the Paid in Full story, right?
Okay.
But I have not heard any contradictory stories that Doo-Wop and L.A. were basically the New York version of Young Boys Incorporated.
Okay.
15, 16-year-olds literally making millions of dollars.
Mm-hmm.
And the impact, and it, you know, you were of age seeing the YBI phenomenon here in Detroit, right?
I was living around the corner from it. My grandparents, My grandparents
stayed not too far from headquarters.
Right, exactly. We heard things, but you know, as a kid, they tried to keep me sheltered from it. But I mean,
okay, but you saw how it changed Detroit's culture.
Oh God, yes. I'll never forget going to high school to Ground Effects. It was like it looked like UFOs. I mean, it was the bumping sounds, the clothes. I mean,
so let me unpack when I say it changed the culture. Everything. You had, and again, it seemed to be the same kind of situation of the impact that doo-wop and his man L.A. had in Harlem is what guys like Brett and Pep,
okay,
and Bunyan and all those guys who were just in their teens,
right,
handling hundreds of thousands of dollars buying custom, you know, they were talking about like doo-wop was the first guy in Harlem to buy an Audi, and then his man L.A. went and bought a Saab.
Wow.
Same thing, you know, these guys here, they were buying what was the big Corvette, the Crossfire.
Okay.
And the wild young boys was buying them Crossfire Vets. They made Laredo Jeeps, what Laredo Jeeps are.
Mm-hmm.
They and for better or for worse, you know, I'm old enough to, because right before that era, you know, if you were a high school kid,
mm-hmm,
and you had a job at the mall and you had a car.
No, you was that guy.
You were that guy.
No, you had getting anything you wanted.
I mean, you were the young lady's alpha male.
Mm-hmm.
If you had a job, I mean, I'm talking about at the restaurant, at the mall, or at the movie theater, and you had a car of your own,
it was a wrap.
You were 16, 17 years old.
It was a wrap.
And you getting a paycheck every 7-14 days. You were the envy of all your friends.
Yes, indeed.
And then the YBI phenomenon occurred.
No, that whole landscape changed.
And then you saw, for lack of a better word, your peer competition. You weren't competing to see who was doing better at working at the movie theater or working at the Foot Locker. It was... these guys were buying. They were doing better than everybody's parents.
Mm-hmm.
They, you know, it made it difficult to listen to the teacher and the principal and what he's saying, although what the teacher and the principal were saying was correct.
Mm-hmm.
But your man is 16. He just does not have drive. And the same thing with they're saying this doo-wop and L.A. in Harlem. They were buying these cars before they had driver's license. I know that Dexter YBI crew, they were buying whips long before they had driver's license.
Yeah, big time.
They're wearing $20,000, $30,000, $40,000 worth of jewelry. And again, for better or for worse, the whole world, the whole Detroit saw this. And just like Detroit, like Harlem with those guys, it wasn't that like doo-wop and L.A. and Harlem. They came in the aftermath of the Nicky Barnes organization going away. Frank Matthews had fled years before that.
Mm-hmm.
The Freddie Myers organization that went down in 83. YBI followed Doc Davis and Frank Nitti Usher and, of course, Eddie Jackson and Pops Black Butch Rudolph and that crew.
Mm-hmm.
Shout out to 5-0. Just talked to 5-0 nephew. Shout out to Yasmin. But Eddie and all those guys from the 70s, I was just thinking about this. Like Eddie and his whole crew, they were all family. They all had, when they started hustling, they all had jobs and children.
So yes, they did. They, what, 26, 28?
Pops was in his late 20s. Eddie was in his mid-20s. 5-0, Dolph, all those guys were mid to late 20s. But they all had worked at the plant.
Mm-hmm. All right, bus driver, cab driver.
It's different when you get into the streets and you have a family, a woman or wife and kids,
mm-hmm,
and you get into the game and you're a sophomore in high school.
Yeah, that changes the dynamic exponentially.
And it made young people not want to wait for success.
That's right.
It made waiting, saving, that shit went out the window.
Mm-hmm.
I can get with my man. They got that China White, and it can happen. I can go from walking to riding Benzes in a month. You know, in the murder and mayhem, you know, and so they're talking about in this in the doo-wop documentary, and the same again, same thing with the YBI thing here. What nobody had was any financial literacy, right?
Absolutely not.
Now, of course, we now, like me as a middle-aged businessman, talking about the 16-year-olds don't talk about financial literacy. And we often, when people cover this crime stuff or this street stuff, they don't put the age of the people in context. It is so crazy to be 18, 17, handling millions of dollars. Coming from a poverty environment where no one's ever had any real money.
That's right.
So they don't know. Nobody's telling them, hey, you should be. I mean, even though Doo-Wop, this guy Doo-Wop later in his career, he would end up after a robbery attempt in New York or the killing of his uncle Butter. He ended up taking a 2-year break, went down to Virginia, set up his thing. When he came back, he bought a clothing store.
Okay.
And he set up a record label right actually before his demise.
Okay.
But nobody is saying, hey, young man, do you understand? You're 17, 18 years old. You're sitting on $3-4 million. This is in the 80s. So $3-4 million in the 80s, easily 10, 12 million now.
Mm-hmm.
You don't need to do this anymore. You won. You already have won the game of life at 18.
That's right.
Go to Jamaica. Go to the Bahamas. Move to Hawaii. But with no financial literacy or no one around, same situation, of course, with YBI.
Right.
I know all those guys are still like all that money. And I can relate to all the money that has touched my hands. And we did better with the money than most. You know, 40-year family business and all.
Mm-hmm.
But he's a phenomenal character. And I really want I had never really heard of another city that had I understood exactly, obviously, being here, what YBI did to Detroit and how it changed the landscape and mindset of people, right? But yeah, for those of you guys who are into that, check out the Doo-Wop LA story. You'll find it quite interesting. And what I did not know, if you're familiar with the Jay-Z Damon Dash story, that Dame says when he first met Jay-Z, and people are like, well, why did you know you could deal with him? And Dame's like, because he was wearing Nike Air Force Ones, and only us guys in Harlem's wore Uptowns. Guys in Brooklyn didn't wear Air Force Ones, so when Dame's like, when he saw Jay wearing Air Force Ones, he was like, okay, this guy got some style. What I did not know until watching the Doo-Wop documentary, that it was Doo-Wop in L.A. and that crew that made the Air Force Ones known as Uptowns.
Uptowns, okay.
That came from that crew, and they were home-based in an area of Harlem known as Sugar Hill. Which okay. You guys know, there's a famous movie.
Yeah, the movie.
We're going to review on
the Weston. AZ song.
Exactly. and just let me wrap this up about culture and difference. You know, I was telling you about, I was working down at Rockefeller Center. We still hot there?
Yeah, he's still cool.
And there was this Dominican guy. Shout out to Miguel.
Mm-hmm.
And Miguel was a busboy at the restaurant there at Rockefeller Center.
Okay.
Miguel was driving a 500 Benz to work. He had the bag. He's plugged in with the Dominicans uptown 145th, 155th, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But in his culture, even though he's riding Benzes,
mm-hmm.
handling bricks, it was still expected that he would work.
Okay.
Or get a bodega or something. What he could not do was just sell dope. Yeah, so to wrap up, Brother Lou, on this the legend of Doo-Wop in L.A. out of Harlem. Again, if you guys are not up on that, it's a lot of stuff on YouTube available about them. Mm-hmm. I'm going to have to go back through the archives and really do a little deeper dive into them. Mm-hmm. But there were a couple things, again, it reminded me, because one of the incidents that like led to the demise of the brother L.A.
Okay.
was his mom's house gets robbed by, of course, some comrades. Because what Biggie say? That cheddar breed jealousy. And some guys he had started off hustling with end up robbing his mom's house, which led to a beef, which eventually led to LA's demise.
Damn.
And it reminded me, though, when Eddie moved, when he told my father that he was going to move to the suburbs and get out the city. And he was like, "Wow, you got a nice house in the city." And Eddie was like, "Man, I can't have all this money and niggas jumping out on the bushes. I got to worry about niggas jumping out the bushes and shit like that." And so many, again, when it's new to you, you know, and that's what we have to really understand. The money be new. They don't, we don't even know. No one to say, "Hey, man, you can't be making $1 million a week and your mama's still in the hood.
Can't do it."
Tragedy gonna happen. And there's so many from New York to Detroit to Atlanta, tragedies that occur because we just don't be knowing. And it ain't just people in the street.
It ain't people in the street. I think about that tragedy with Jennifer Hudson.
Jennifer Hudson, God rest her soul. Shout out to Jennifer Hudson.
Oh, she's still alive.
Yeah, she's still alive, but her family.
Yeah, her family, man. Wow.
And nobody, same situation, new money. Mm-hmm. And nobody say, "Hey, baby girl, you all on TV. People seeing this, that, and the third. You all in these movies. Your mama's still here on the block."
That's right.
Somebody going to think something sideways. You know, but the big man, RIP Eddie Jackson, you know, Eddie was like, "Nah, we moving out here to the suburbs with the private security. Only niggas going to be around here going to be Smokey Robinson and some NBA ball players, Motown Elite.
Right.
And I ain't got to worry about when I come out, when I pull up at night in my Rolls Royce. As he said, niggas jumping off the roof, niggas coming from behind the bushes, Berman. I ain't living like that."
And nowadays, Southfield ain't the place to be like that.
No, not now. You got to go West Bloomfield or Bloomfield Hills.
That's right.
Or Grosse Pointe. But the point is, you got to get out the hood.
Got to.
And as we see in the hip-hop community now, all the stuff that still continues to happen because you have young black millionaires who still keep themselves so close to the front line.
That's right.
There was a little side note on him, though. Doo-Wop was charging the Dominicans $10,000, I want to say, a day to hustle on his block. He was an insightful young man.
Oh, he was enterprising.
He was an enterprising young man. Yeah. And to show you the kind of connect, according to the content that's out there, you know, his plug was so good that he told the Dominicans who were getting supplied directly from the Colombians, he needed help. And in fact, if you guys want a piece of the action on my block, I need that 10,000. I need that 10 large a day, and you kids can get a piece of the action. But without that, we ain't having
it. We can't do this.
We can't do that. While we understood that in the quote unquote legitimate economy.
Wow, man.
That you just can't come to my neighborhood, open up a store, and sell all the Hennessy and Remy and Newports on my block, and then you don't give a nothing to the block?
Nah. No panache?
Nothing. But hard something and bubble gum, and guess what? I'm fresh out of bubble gum. You know what I mean? So again, yeah, man. Fascinating story. Those guys do up in LA. They were truly the YBI of New York. Mm-hmm. Interesting part of our history. Really, really affected. Because if they affected the culture of Harlem, that means they affected the culture of hip hop.
Without question.
Which means they affected the culture of the world.
Definitely.
Because hip hop culture is the dominant culture and driving force.
It beat out rock.
You know what I mean? So, yeah, man. Doo-Wop LA. You guys, if you're into that stuff, Check them out.
Big time.
And kind of segueing back to the glory days of cocaine.
Before such an entree, Vu, did you want to give a little love to our sponsor?
Yeah, Vano. Vano's Apparel. Vano is over there on Davidson. I got to get the address. I should be ready, locked, and loaded with this. But right there on Davidson between Linwood and Dexter is Vano's Apparel. Go in there. They've got the hottest men and women apparel available. That is at 3246 West Davidson, Suite A. Mm-hmm. Right next to it is also under the Vano umbrella.
Blazing Hookahs.
Blazing Hookahs. Got to holler at them. Holler at, you can ask for Vano if you're over there. You can ask for Kayla. You can ask for Bow Wow or any of the other family over there. Again, just the hottest apparel in the city. I think even this hoodie and jogging set I got came from there.
No question. It's top notch up there.
Top notch. I always tease Vano that he is the Rodeo Drive of the hood.
Without question.
So shout out to the homie Vano, and definitely for real, brothers and sisters, you guys got to get some gear. You're doing what you're doing. Seasons are changing. You got to get your coat game right. Got to get your boot game right.
Yep.
Definitely it will be worth your time to go check out Vano's Apparel, and that's at 3246 West Davidson, Suite A. If you guys like hookah, need some hookah apparel or hookah infrastructure, you know, if you want to throw a hookah party, just want a book, a small place for a venue, Blazing Hookahs is a great location. So again, 3246 West Davidson, Vano's and Blazing Hookahs. Give them a shout. Mention Lou's name, mention my name, mention Big Boss Filmworks, Motown Mafia Podcast. They always show love, but they will show even some additional love. And proud for them to be a sponsor of the Motown Mafia Podcast.
Big time. And if you're interested, hit us up in sponsorship.
Yes, a lot of sponsorship opportunities. We'll help you get out there, man. We'll help you get out there. We're redoing the studio here. They were telling me, in fact, in the front, Lou, that we should use, because we're right here on West 7 Mile, that front banner, that we can rotate it out. So maybe we have to get over there and get to Vano's and get some official sponsorship collateral going.
There we go.
So you know that maybe about 3 weeks ago, Basil Miller, we've heard us speak about him. The huge mega whale hustler out of the Bahamas. Some of his family reached out to us.
Yes.
Gonna actually be catching up with them shortly. And they sent us, we'll get hopefully a lot more of it, but some archival newspaper footage from covering Mr. B. You guys have heard early on. We referred to him as Mr. Q. Was trying to kind of keep the anonymity, but as this thing grew bigger and bigger,
Cat's out the bag that
Mr. Q was Mr. B and that Mr. B is Basil Miller.
Mm-hmm.
R.I.P.
Rest in peace. Yeah, big time.
And he sent us a newspaper clipping. So just for, again, the backstory, though, for you guys who don't know, once my pops got out of the Fed joint from that original one, that's Brother Tatum. We just shot some good stuff with Brother Ray. Hey, Ray, we still taping, brother. I'll hit you back. Shout out to Ray Tatum getting off Zero Atlanta. Got some great content we just did with him. But so, come 84, Pops has come home from the Fed joint. He's done his time from the original indictment with Eddie and the 32-man indictment, you know, during the grand hustle of the 70s.
Right.
While he's in the Atlanta Federal Penitentiary, he meets a gentleman by the name of Basil Miller. Basil Miller is from the Bahamas, and what I did not know until this article, he had actually been sentenced to 45 years. He would not do 45 years. He was exceptionally well connected.
A lot of interest to keep that from happening.
Yeah, there were a lot of interest to keep that from happening. Basil was obviously a big shot, you know, in the Fed joint is like almost college. Everybody knows everybody's resume and where they went to, what they've accomplished and things of that. And Basil knew the members of the Gambino family that Pops knew from working for Eddie. So Pops and Basil form a relationship. They keep in touch. So this is like circa 82-ish, 81, 82-ish. Pops gets down to Atlanta in 77. So I guess he meets Basil in 77 because Basil gets arrested August 17th, 1974.
Right.
So basically 3 years later, he's going to be, he's already at Atlanta when Pop gets to Atlanta Federal Penitentiary. They see that he sees he's a big whale. You know, they always laugh. The only blacks that could sit at the table with the Italians was Mr. B and Pops.
And your dad.
Yeah, they'd be like, yeah, you need special niggas. Y'all, why them Italians look, talk to y'all, let y'all eat with them, you know? And Pops would be like, they talk crazy about Basil, but never to his face.
Oh, no.
<He'd be> like, they call him funny style and everything else, but never to his face. So, Mr. B, Basil and Pops form a relationship, get really, really cool during their time in Atlanta, exchange information. Fast forward, Pops gets out in 84. He's still doing some things with the Westies.
Okay.
And that crew. When that situation ends, about, I guess Basil must have come home in 85-ish or right in there. He gets the phone call from his man saying, I'm back home. I'm back in the island. I got my thing back reestablished. Why don't you come down here and holler at me?
Right.
And I'll never forget. So Pops is telling me about his man that's he did time with that's in the Bahamas. And he's going to, and now Pops, you know, in his day, boy, hell of a guy. He is still on parole.
Okay.
So needless to say, he's not supposed to be leaving the country to go speak to, he's not supposed to speak to any other felons, but of course, everybody he knows is a felon. So he's like, I'm going to go down here, Junior. I'm going to go down to the Bahamas and just see what my man talking about. So that's like on a Friday, Lou.
Okay.
He's staying at Mr. Moore's suite there on 6 Mile in the building.
Okay.
So he leaves like on a Friday. I'll never forget. I come back home. I mean, I come back to see, I think because he told me he was coming back on Monday. Monday, I come by the joint. And he had, I mean, he must have got there 3 minutes before me because he still got his luggage on his arm and he's taking off his carry-on bag and he undoes his he undoes his jacket. And he's just talking to me casually and he's like, drops his bag, takes off his jacket, then he takes off his sweater.
He had a bird on it.
And there's a key tap, there's a key, there's a brick taped to his stomach and another key taped to his back.
You see?
And I'm like, Daddy, what are you doing? He was like, well, you know, I was already on down there under, you know, fake ID.
Right.
Anyway, and I didn't catch no heat going down there. And if I'd have caught some heat, they'd have swiped me on my way down, likely.
Ooh, but times are different.
Oh, no, you can't do you. Do not get on planes now. Do not go through airport security doing such things in 2022. But yes, different world. Different world, no facial recognition or any of that stuff back then. And so I'm like, so what happened? He was like, so I was down there. My man was like, we back on. You down here. We can wait for you to send some people back down here to get it popping. Or you can go ahead and, you know, Pops at that time was still a young man. He, you know, he's in his early 40s. He was like,
oh, yeah.
Yeah, no, he was in the middle of it.
He was getting it in.
He was like, no, nah, we ain't got to wait. We can get it popping now. I'll take two back with me now.
Wow.
And him and Mr. B, that started their run. He eventually would start sending, God rest his soul, Cousin Tony, Cousin, you know, other family members whose names I won't say. Shout out, cuz. Hope she's doing well. No, she's doing well, in fact. And then eventually, of course, that led to me going down to the islands because we used to, back in them days, we would just fly. He would either meet his people in Miami.
Okay.
Go ahead, you got a question?
Yeah, I do got a question. It was, at what point did Basil get kidnapped?
Okay, so that's going back to this newspaper article, which we will post this article. Our website is being redone.
Yeah,
and we're going to have this newspaper article other ones. Go ahead.
Yeah, I might do a hell of a fellas for that one. It's formerly known as The Real Ones. The docuseries on Basil Miller, not on Basil Miller, but just different hustlers from the past.
Right. So according to this newspaper article from the newspapers down there, the authorities spent $1,100,000 in a three-country chase because it seems, Basil, before he got sentenced, was out on a $500,000 bond that he skipped out on. Now, again, family, this is $500,000 in 1974. Yeah. That is, by all math, the same as walking away for $5
million. Now.
The government had spent $100,000 trying to track him down.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, they spent in today's money $1 million trying to find him. They track him down in the U.S. Virgin Islands, and the legend goes that the agents put a Mickey in his drink, and next thing when he wakes up, he's in Dade County in Miami federal court.
As they often will do.
Yeah. In fact, not to go into that part of the story, when the DEA pulled me off the plane and I'm talking to Basil's lawyer down in Miami, and
right,
he's debriefing me about what just happened.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, oh, you only had $80,000. Usually when Mr. Miller's friends call me, I have to bail them out from Dade County. But $80,000, they said, Miami International, this is again truly in the heart of the Miami Vice era. But yeah, kidnapping was about. Now with that article, they were able to connect the dots. So he's on the run.
Mm-hmm.
He's bouncing all around the Caribbean, attempting to avoid the authorities.
Right.
The authorities have thrown $100,000 of money at catching him back then.
Okay.
They catch up to him in the U.S. Virgin Islands, hit him with a Mickey.
Uh huh.
And when he wakes up, he's in Miami.
And it was his It was his daughter. Was it his daughter or his niece that helped you out during your situation?
So when that incident occurs with me, so Pops had started sending me down there to deliver Mr. B his money. It was really my internship and really, really working for my father.
Right.
When that thing goes south and the DEA mistake me for dad and they pulled me off the plane,
mm-hmm.
Take my $9,000, I had $90,000 with me. They take 10. They keep me in detention at Miami International for 4 hours. So needless to say, first thing they know I didn't get off the plane in the Bahamas. So
right,
it was Mr. B who calls my old man and says, I think we got some problems. Your son never made the flight.
Okay.
Have you heard from him? Pops is like, no, I didn't hear from him. So they were able to put two and two together. They're like, he's been detained.
Right.
So when I call Pops from Miami International, as soon as the DEA finally lets me go, first thing he says is they just let you go? Or they still holding you? And I was like, no, they let me go. And he was like, all right, go back to your normal hotel.
Mm-hmm.
And how much we got?
Yeah, you got about 10 minutes.
Go back to your normal hotel, and our people will get in touch with you.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. B's daughter. His daughter immediately flew up from the Bahamas and came and got the bag from me. And actually, that's the last time I ever saw him. Last time I ever spoke to them.
Wow. Okay.
Of course, they would change my life because then Mr. B would say, just start taking the money to New York. I got some bankers who can circle it around through some legitimate methods and get me back my money. Of course, that leads to me moving to New York and the rest, as they say, becomes history. But yeah, we'll post that article. He Frank Matthews ran away on a $500,000 bond in 72. Mr. B is running off on $500,000. But the levels, these guys were truly the pioneers of this stuff. And when you guys see the movie Blow, and you hear about, in fact, he ended up introducing one of Pop's lieutenants, John the Baptist, to Carlos Leader. Carlos Leader was, of course, a chief lieutenant of Pablo Escobar. But it is not an overstatement to say that this guy, Basil Miller, was one of the architects of that whole thing in Norman's Cay. That pipeline from the Escobar Medellin cartel through the Bahamas into Miami.
Because when you, I remember you telling me you went up to the island where he was at, and it was very much like that scene. Like,
completely.
Was it you who told me it was like Keys in the Water? Just
so, yeah. This has been my second or third trip down there, and I'm chilling with his son, you know, and this guy was so famous and respected, you know, down in the islands.
Black Sosa.
When you'd go through, like, the mall or whatever, people would just be like, Basil, Basil, Basil. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously, Black Man Helen, that kind of bread.
Yeah, big time.
He was in a league with not a lot of other people. But so his son introduces me to his man, you know, again, back to like we were talking about, brothers down there was getting it, you know, he was our age, I was like 20, 21 back then when this is going down. Mm-hmm. He introduced him to his man's 21, driving 5 series BMWs down in the Bahamas and shit, and he tells me this story about his mom, who, you know, is old school and would be washing clothes in the ocean, and like 3 big garbage bags floated up. And she opens them up, and she thinks, poor woman, she thinks it's dish detergent. And she starts using the stuff in the garbage bags to wash clothes from. And when her son sees what she's doing, he's like, what's the problem, Mom? Because he don't know exactly what's happening yet. And she says, oh, this detergent is too strong. It's burning holes in the clothes. And he tastes it. He's like, oh, Mom didn't like. Threw away 8 bricks, but it was still a whole nother garbage. Yeah, I mean, they were running so much stuff from the Bahamas to South Florida, and the DEA and the Coast Guard would hop on, would catch the planes or the speedboats or cigarette boats, and people would just be dumping bags of Yale out of helicopters, out of airplanes, or out of speedboats. To right now, today, in fact, Eddie Jr. was just telling me that in South Florida used to be people went scavenging trying to find old Spanish ships full of gold.
Right. They're trying to find.
Right now, the scavenge is people rent boats and get all kind of equipment in attempt to find that bag. All those thousands and tens of thousands of bricks that got thrown out of airplanes, speedboats. And helicopters.
But what is too? And you gotta forgive my ignorance. But after 40 years, would it even?
If it was wrapped the way they did it, it would still be, because they purposely, of course, they're wrapped in plastic and rubber.
Okay. So it's much like coffee.
I mean, they're airtight sealed.
Yeah, big time.
And the packages are waterproof. They float to the bottom of the ocean. It's as good today as it was in 1984.
There's some people out there right now going to buy some scuba gear.
I'm telling you, it's a big deal down there in the Fort Lauderdale, Miami area. The scavenging. It's, again, they're not trying to find the Armada boat from 1500.
Right.
They're trying to find the Escobar bag from 82. So we're going to follow up. We'll keep you guys abreast. I'm really hopeful to get to the islands. We're going to, you know, check the temperature when we catch up with the people down there. But just a fascinating character of all the many people I met through working for my pops. This guy was definitely in a league by himself. Highly educated. Again, you know, he didn't work with the Medellin cartel, second, third person. He was directly, him and Carlos, he was one of the architects of this whole thing. You go to Miami and you see what the Yale business did for Miami. He played his small part in that happening.
Did his thing, big time.
Big things. Legend of Mr. B. So yeah, when you can get that up on, but definitely got anyway. www.bigbossfilmworks.com. I don't want to say it too early. We got some new technical people we brought onto the team. Shout out to Olga.
Yeah, Miss Olga. Big ups.
So we got some really talented people now working on our website. And so you guys will be able to go into the archives and see all those newspaper articles about Pops and Eddie, their associates, newspaper articles about Mr. B. Really take your time and digest them. And then when you guys got some questions, you can hit us up. Speaking of hitting us up, they need to be doing what?
You need to be hitting us up at our Facebook. You need to hit us up at our Instagram, all attached to the name Big Boss Filmworks. We are also on TikTok. And if you want to get in touch with us, you can, you know, leave us an email, bigbossfilmworks@yahoo.com or bigbossfilmworks@gmail.com. Any questions or inquiries?
Yes, and please make sure you guys are hitting that like, share, and subscribe button. We approach another milestone.
Don't forget the notification bell.
And don't forget that if you're in the whip driving, you want to check out this content, but you can't view it, you can go directly to Spotify or Anchor and just check out the Motown Mafia podcast. You can ride and hear us chopping up the game.
And very soon we will be up on Apple.
Coming soon, so it's going down. So in my quest to gain more knowledge to share with the family out there, Lou.
Right on.
We saw as the year end, you know, they always at the end of the year have the list of the most this, the most that.
Absolutely.
And they listed the 25 wealthiest black people on earth.
And you see, this list I got it here.
Okay, so some of these names, what struck me, besides, because some of these names are going to be names that you guys have all heard of and know their backstory, but it pondered me that some of these names I had not even heard of, and I'm kind of supposed to be in the know
right on
about these things. So number 25 of the top 25 is somebody who we definitely know. That would be Miss Carter, a.k.a. the Queen Bee, Beyonce, coming in at a net worth of $400 million.
The family woman.
The family woman, a shout out to Queen Bee. She has just transitioned with such class and grace that we were just kicking off.
She gets nothing but respect from us.
She should. She is a role model. She did her thing. She shaped that thing, but she has transitioned into being a mom with class, and she ain't trying to still be Destiny's Child no more, Luke.
Yeah, Destiny's Child is done.
Just she like. And we're going to get to her hubby, because her hubby's definitely on the list too. But you had Beyonce coming in at number 25. You had Money Mayweather coming in at Queen Bee coming in at $400 million. You had Floyd Money Mayweather. Don't have to tell you guys who he is or how he got his bread. He came in at number 24.
All right.
At $450 million.
Get that money.
Hailing out of Lansing, Michigan. Long before you guys knew him, we knew about the Magic Man here in the D. Irvin Magic Johnson. $600 million coming in at 24. God, the great thing about the Magic story is he's made way more money in real estate and as a businsman than he did, dribbling that basketball.
They wasn't giving that kind of money out back then.
Nah. So shout out to the Magic Man, a Michigan hometowner.
Get that money.
Number 22, you can call him what you want, but most just know him as Puff. Sean Puffy Combs, coming in at $740 million. Again, thing about Puff, he's known and got his break in hip-hop, but it is his Ciroc.
It's been that alcohol, man.
It's been his Ciroc and other business ventures that have accumulated most of his
clothing, Sean John.
Those two, you just hit it.
Yeah, big time.
The Sean John and Ciroc brands have really got Puff his approaching billionaire status, and he will make it there. Number 21, the Dre Man, Dr. Dre.
Dre Beats.
Dre Beat, again, got to start in hip-hop, but Dre ain't worth $800 million because of the Dog Pound.
No.
And Death Row.
No.
He hit that lick with Dre Beats, those headphones.
Springboard, man.
So great, both, you know, and I think we just need to reiterate that. The way the number 23 Magic made his $600 million Puff, number 22 $740 million, not Andre. They all used their celebrity that they made either in sports and entertainment to then go into the business world.
Exactly.
To hit that big, big lick. Number 20, I know y'all going to say he ain't black, but he is black. The Ku Klux Klan would lynch him. Tiger Woods coming in at $800 million. Again, he's made a ton of money winning golf tournaments, but his TW deal with Nike, Tiger Woods apparel.
Yeah, big time.
Very much he is the Jordan of golf with his brand. Speaking of Jordan, the second coming of Michael Jordan. Number 19, LeBron James coming in. Wow, got to give it to LeBron again. Never really been a huge fan of him actually on the court, but I love the way he's carried himself.
His acumen is on point.
Love the way he's a family man. Love the way that this man never went to college, but he took the mentorship of people like Hov. We good on the clock?
Oh.
Zach, we're going to finish this list. Let's see. And the fact that early in his career, he decided to bring his homeboys on to manage his career.
Okay.
Instead of dealing with one of those, dealing with the Mike Ovitz and the big agents.
Right.
You know, and so he created, as the kids would say, he put on his homies. And more importantly, his homies handled it correctly.
Absolutely.
And they've managed his brand. Those are all guys that LeBron went to high school and grew up with who run his show.
And if you want to check out something pretty cool, I can't remember if it was Stars or Showtime.
HBO?
No, it wasn't. It wasn't HBO. It was either Stars or Showtime. It was, well, that's hot.
That's on HBO.
But he had produced a show that was somewhat like how your big man on campus is.
Really?
Yeah, it's called Survivor's Remorse.
I didn't know LeBron was behind that.
LeBron was behind that.
I watched that show.
Yeah,
that was a hot show.
That was supposed to be him.
Wow, so yeah, definitely check that out. Survivor's Remorse. Did not know that LeBron was the executive producer. I've checked out his show on HBO.
Yeah.
Barbershop, he always has great people. Of course, everybody wants to sit down and chop it up with LeBron.
Right, who wouldn't?
So just again, yeah, LeBron James coming in at number 19, richest African Americans on planet Earth at $850 million. Coming in at 18, the house that Madea built.
All right.
I've said what I've said about what I think about black men wearing dresses. I am not a Tyler Perry basher, though. I understand the different cultures, northern culture versus southern culture.
Right.
All of the above. I think some of those lessons that he attempts to tell in the Madea content to me is more valuable than whatever the defeminization of black men wearing dresses might annoy me. So shout out to TP, Tyler Perry coming in at an even $1 billion. Ooh. Then, number 17, this is
you good.
No, I'm not. Now I am.
Mm-hmm.
Tyler Perry coming in again at $1 billion and number 18 on the list of richest black folks on planet Earth. Number 17 was, again, one of the guys who I'm just like, how do we not know about this kind of guy? A guy by the name of Alex Karp. According to this list, his net worth is $1.2 billion. He started a software company by the name of Paltira Tech, Palatir Tech.
Okay.
Probably getting money in the software and the computer space. So, you know, throughout the first 18 people, they were all household names.
Okay.
But he got more money than Tyler. He got more money than LeBron. He got more money than Tiger, than Dre, than Puff, than Magic, than Floyd, than Queen B. And we need to know about people like that so some of our kids will grow up to be software titans also.
Yeah.
Alex Karp, that's Alex K-A-R-P, coming in at $1.2 billion. At number 16, I did my share parrot for this fortune because I bought everything that he ever has made. Number 16, God MC, Hova.
Jay.
Sean Carter coming in at 1.3. Again, got his name, got his brand, hit a couple licks in the music business. But the $200 million he got from selling Rockaware just sold half of his interest in Ace of Spades, just sold Tidal.
Tidal.
And then
went into Cash App, correct?
I mean, he's partnered with Jack Dorsey at Cash App.
Yeah.
Now he's on the board of directors of Cash App, or Square, actually the parent company. He's on the board of directors of Square.
Oh, of Square,
which owns Cash App.
Got you.
Yeah, he running. He rolled, and that was all part of the deal because it was Square that bought Title.
Okay.
And part of the deal, besides the $600 million he got for Title. And that, again, to mention, he had brought Alicia Keys, Swizz Beatz, and a bunch of people in on that Title deal with him.
Okay.
So when he exited, they all broke that. Everybody got, everybody is, they say, usual suspects. Everybody got well together.
There you go.
You know, and again, we as a community got to learn how that kind of thing works. Number 15, again, another brother never heard of, and we got to talk about him. Another tech guy. He's an African brother, Toipi Watuna. So I'm killing his first name. It's T-O-P-E, last name A-W-O-T-M-A. Coming in at 1.4. He's got a company called Calderi, C-A-L-E-N-D-L-Y, coming in at 1.4. Again, another brother. I don't know how we don't, these brothers don't get the press they deserve. Number 14, we're back to a household name.
All right.
His Airness. You guys have got his sneakers.
Yeah.
You know, that'd be Michael Air Jordan.
Oh, yeah.
His Airness, needless to say again, made a couple pennies on the basketball court, but obviously the deal he made with Nike. And his
Jumpman is the Jumpman.
Check this out though, number 13, the sister Rihanna.
Oh yeah, and her
Fenty cosmetic line.
Look out!
Again, rode Hova's coattails at Roc Nation, got a name for herself, built a brand, has hit a mega lick with her cosmetics.
The billionaire tree.
Kanye, Rihanna, the whole clique. I mean, yeah, 1.7 billion Rihanna. Go figure. We run the city, I guess. Her
boy, they'd be dangerous if they put some of that money together. Now,
I guess when her, Hove, and Kanye made "We Run the City," they wasn't bullshitting, was they?
I think that was an accuracy. That was ism.
Number 12, though, Michael Lee Chan. Company by the name of, it's an investment company. He's a banker kind of style. National commercial banker, coming in at 1.9 billion. Look the brothers up. Michael Lee Chin, C-H-I-N.
All right.
Number 11.
Yeezy.
Yeezy. Himself, Kanyeezy. Jesus. Yeah.
Yeah, buddy. What's he up to now? About what, 6 B's or what?
They had them at 4.
Okay.
They had them at 4. No, actually, they lowballed them. I think Kanye gets upset at that. They had Kanye in at 2 billion.
Last I read, he was up to 6.6.
Yeah, and of course, again, made a lot of money selling records, but not nearly what he has made with his deals with Adidas and the Yeezys, his deal with the Gap.
And it's funny that
deal with Louis Vuitton.
The lack of record sales has really separated, so to speak, the English from the Dutch. It's like the business side of these artists really came to the fore after records stopped selling real well.
Well, streams still. I mean, 99 cents.
Well, I mean, yeah, streams, but you ain't getting no cake like they getting for streams.
Nah.
People crying about how little money they getting from their streams.
They go platinum and still be broke.
Yeah, exactly.
Kind of know a little bit about this person at number 10. Her name is Isabella DeSantos. Her daddy was the president of Angola for 40 years. Okay. Shout out to my coffee partner, Miguel over Big there up. In Angola. They heavily invested in telecommunications over there in Angola and in oil, really oil-rich country. Isabella DeSantos, big fish over there in Angola. Never met her, met some of her employees, you know, when we were going to the World Bank and doing all that stuff with Cafe Kazinga prior to the pandemic. And, you know, I spent a little time in Angola. So, yeah, sister, number 10, she's getting it in. At 2.3 billion.
They have no landlines over there. Is that correct?
They pretty much skipped over all the landlines and went straight digital.
Okay.
So everything is cellular. So her coming in right
now. No, that would be digital key. Thing,
forget about it.
Yeah, big time.
Forget about it.
Yeah.
She basically is the AT&T or Verizon of Angola.
Beautiful.
Yeah. Number 9, You know her. You guys got the O channel. Oprah Winfrey coming in at $2.6 billion. We don't have to spend no time. No shout out to the OG Oprah. Number eight was a brother by the name of Patrice Motsepe, Motsepe, coming in at $3.4 billion, brothers, and he is into mining. His company is called the African Rainbow Mineral Company, based out of South Africa. We can make money doing more than singing, dancing, and dunking a basketball.
And some of these billionaires are venture capitalists looking for the next big business. So if you got it, reach out to somebody with a little bit more than you.
Somebody with a platform who know how to get in touch with somebody. Like who as what my man saying, the Notorious movie, because, you know, I know a guy to know a guy.
I know a guy to know a guy. Better Call Saul, too.
Number seven was another brother never heard of, Stephen. I'm not even gonna
Masawaya.
Stephen Masawaya coming. Thank you, Luke. Coming in at $3.9 billion. Also, mobile phones. We're at in the motherland, getting off zero. Got a whole chapter in here talking about go where the gold is. Talking about doing business in the motherland. He's coming in again at $3.9 billion. He got his hustle on doing cell phones in Zimbabwe. Another brother I had not heard of, but okay. I mean, these guys are dwarfing a lot of the big names we had heard of, but we don't hear about these brother. Brother by the name of David Stewart, coming in at $5.8 billion, worldwide tech company. Two of his clients that you probably have heard of is a bank called Citibank and a company called Verizon.
Yeah, they need to be as big in our community as the Elon Musk.
We got to start saluting those kind of people,
these
man.
People need, they need their roses, man. I mean.
Yep, we are good. We had left off at number six. That was, Brother Stewart at $5.8 billion worldwide tech. His clients were Citibank and Verizon. Then we had number five. Again, another brother just never heard of from the motherland again. Notice the pattern as these numbers get bigger that these brothers are based in Africa.
In Africa.
Abdullah Sahab Rabi. That's Abdul, A-D-D-U-L, middle name. Sahab, S-A-M-A-D, last name, Rabu. R-A-B-I-U, coming in at $6.8 billion. He's got his hands in everything in Nigeria. The name of his company is the Bua Group, B-U-A Group. A Nigerian conglomerate is what they call them. Got a real bag, $6.8 billion. I keep telling family, you know, we got some connections over there in the motherland. Be going back soon. Actually, I'm missing the motherland a lot. Early next year, maybe my birthday. We'll see. Just got a lot going on here. Number four. Mohammed El Amadi, Mohammed Al Dash, Amoudi, coming in at $6.3 billion. He's a businessman, just investing in a lot of different things. He's got some stuff. He's half. If you black, you black. We know that in America, even he's half black, half Saudi Arabian, based in Ethiopia. $6.3 billion. This brother's beginning to get a little more recognition. His name is coming. He's coming in at number three. That is Robert Smith, coming in at $6.7 billion. He got some press. I don't know if you remember the brother who did the commencement at Morehouse, say 2 years ago, and then shocked everybody, and he said he was going to pay off the student loans.
I do recall, yes.
That was Robert Smith. He is a straight venture capitalist. His company is Vista, located out in Denver. And again, he kind of stepped out on the public scene. Mm-hmm. He gave the commencement at Morehouse, and he paid off all the student debt for every senior in that class.
Okay.
He's a big, big deal. $6.7 billion, Robert Smith. Number two, another brother from the continent. Started off selling soft drinks. He's a Nigerian businessman by the name of Mike Adinga. I'm just going to spell it. A D Enuga.
Adenuga.
See, that's why Lou here. Yes, Mike, say it again.
Adenuga.
Adenuga. Coming in at $7.2 billion in the motherland.
That's my friend.
He's a friend of mine.
That's my friend.
Coming to America. He don't need to come to America. He's done well for himself. And number one, Mr. Dancote. Elkoto Dancote. I have followed this guy because when you spend time in Africa, you're just going to hear his name. And you see his name the way you see, I don't know, Walmart or General Motors or Tesla over here. He's in the concrete, but he's into everything farming. He's a Nigerian businessman, the richest black man on earth today. Today's version of Masa Musa is Mr. Dancote. And in fact, he's starting actually to make some moves over here in America. I believe they just opened up Dancote offices in New York last year, coming in at $14.3 billion net worth.
Jeez.
If brothers want some inspiration and you ain't heard about this brother, Mr. Dancote, you need to look him up. His last name is Dangote, out of the motherland, Nigeria. So those are the 25 wealthiest black people on planet Earth. Give us all a little bit of inspiration.
I got to ask.
Yes.
In your personal opinion, why do you think most of them are coming from Africa?
Because there's 350 million Americans. They estimate that maybe 10%, 10 to 12% of the country is black folks.
Right.
So that puts us at 35, 40, 42, 44 million black folks. Just market share. There's a 1.3 billion Africans on the continent of our brothers and sisters. The average age in Africa is 19 years old.
Okay.
Which means they're making babies. Babies need food, babies need clothes, people are young, they're working, it's just where all the growth is at. Mm-hmm. Everybody needs a cell phone,
mm-hmm.
Everybody needs housing, which means like Mr. Dancote, that if you're in the concrete and cement,
right.
Business is boom, it's just where the action is.
Guess that's
not to mention, it is the motherland which holds, according to everybody, 50% of all the world's valuable resources yet to be that are still underground
untapped
are there in the motherland.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Everybody but us, you know, the stat, last stat I heard was 100,000 Chinese a month.
Yeah, you gave me the book,
The Elephant and the Dragon.
No, it was the one about how the Chinese were beginning to migrate over to Africa. This was the very beginnings of it.
Yeah.
It's heavy.
Everybody knows. And again, I don't tell everybody they need to pack up their bags and move to Africa. I just always put it in these terms. For me to drive from Detroit to Atlanta would take me between 10 and 12 hours. For me to fly to Senegal from New York is a 7.5-hour flight. With the price of gas now, it might be cheaper to fly to Senegal than it is to drive to Atlanta. Do yourself a favor. Go check it out. I've done business over there. I've done business here. And just do yourself. Yeah, we have to get out of thinking so local. And it's good to start local, get a grip and understand your business. But we got to know that if you're a black man on planet Earth in 2020, and especially if you got kids,
mm-hmm.
You look at this list, I bet you this list, 15 years from now, all the top 25 will be in Africa.
Yeah.
Our hip hop and athletes won't be able to keep pace with the wealth that's being created on the continent.
Absolutely. You were saying there's a couple of honorable mentions on this.
Thank you for reminding me. So they listed that top 25, right? And then they had an honorable mention list. And there were two names that really struck me. One, who knew? Eddie Murphy. They estimate Eddie Murphy's wealth at $400 million.
It's a lot of history from him, though. Eddie's like 61 or 62.
I mean, but obviously Eddie's been handling his business.
I'm saying that he's been very smart about these 60 or 61 years he's been alive.
You know, what was the thing he did with Nick Nolte? 48 hours?
48 hours.
I mean, he parlayed that 48 hours thing and those stand-up
Buddy
scenes.
Cop movies.
But then, of course, the Beverly Hills series, right?
Yeah, big time.
That was a big leg.
The new one is coming out just as a plug to him.
Yeah, and then the Coming America thing.
Yeah.
You know, so Eddie's had some franchises that definitely moved the crowd.
Yeah.
And you got a shout out to his business acumen. Yeah, he was on there. And then we wonder why. Coming in at now an estimated net worth of $400 million, Barack Hussein Obama.
Say it louder.
This man, when him and Michelle entered the Oval Office, they were still paying off their student loan debts. They attribute Obama's $400 million net worth to his book sales and his lecture fees. And then very clandestine and numerous other investments.
Mm-hmm.
I ain't mad at you, Barack. I was joking when they were in office that last year of his term. I was like, I know Michelle every day is just marking the calendar. Like, when can we get, who care what Fox say? Who care what CNN? Baby, we about to get to this bag for real, for real.
Right.
I cannot wait. Yeah, no, he's got home in Hawaii, home in L.A., home in Chicago, home in New York, home in D.C. Yes, honorable mention, well away, on his way to working his way to break the top 25, ex-president Barack Hussein Obama.
That's what I'm talking about.
Wow. Wow. And lastly but not least, the segue before we wrap it up today, family. You guys check out on that other platform known by the funny talking white guy. I won't even hate. Saw on Vlad TV.
Yeah.
A great interview he was doing of a guy by the name of J. Alexander Martin.
Okay.
J. Alexander Martin was one of the four brothers that founded FUBU, along with the brother who wrote this book, Damon Johns, Display of Power. And who was also always a regular on the show Shark Tank. But check it out. It's on Vlad TV. He was interviewing this brother, J. Alexander Martin, again, one of the founding members of FUBU. And he was just kicking it about how in our community, just the opposite of the people whose list we were just naming.
Right.
Brothers and sisters who handle their finances very well. You know, he's talking about the first check he got from FUBU was for $1 million. And they asked him, well, what'd you do with that $1 million? He was like, I bought a house and I bought some Cartier glasses. And he went on to estimate that he has squandered over $8 million of his FUBU fortune on foolishness. And it reminded me of the quote-unquote dope man's lifestyle.
Right.
But I think he said something that was really profound.
Okay.
And that was that he came from an environment of want and lack. And when you come from environments of want and lack, you overcompensate.
Overdo it. Absolutely.
And that does that not describe so many of our athletes, entertainers, and hustlers, right?
You've seen the memes online where they'll talk about like how much the net worth of, like, let's say a Bill Gates. He'll have like a simple polo shirt on that costs probably about $50, a pair of Levi jeans that might cost about $80, or whatever kind of shoes that you showed a brother who's got a net worth of like negative 300. He's got bling and the heavy duty shit, you know,
all the trappings of the illusion,
the Cartiers,
the illusion of wealth, because he comes from an environment where those things actually mean I ain't poor,
right?
Because they don't, those things don't impress rich people,
Not at all.
But they do impress poor people.
Yeah.
Because if you ain't got no money and you see a man with some $5,000 glasses on, you're like, he's the man.
Mm-hmm.
Except he's not the man to, when he's talking to somebody who's worth $100 million, they could give a damn about a pair of sunglasses. They could give a damn about, what only thing they care about Red Bottoms is, can we buy the company?
Yeah.
They're interested in buying Louis Vuitton, not wearing Louis Vuitton.
That's right.
But the brothers got a book, and I always try to give the brothers a play. His name is J. Alexander Martin. His book is Money Makes Me Crazy. And he chronicles how irresponsible he was with his money, early money from the FUBU lick. Again, I like watches. It was a watch. It's a good play. Actually, watches are a good investment. But as he said, did I need 8 watches? Did I need 8 right. high-profile watches? Did I need 8 luxury cars? And so much, we do so much because we love, you know, we are so impressed as a culture by things.
To our detriment.
To our detriment. And those things won't happen, as we were doing on the prior episode of the 25 wealthiest black people on earth. You got to prioritize yourself. So I found it very compelling, and it's on Vlad TV. His name is J. Alexander Martin. His book is Money Makes Me Crazy. He's got a lot of great stories and anecdotes, I think, for any brother who's got some money, gonna get some money soon, wondered why. You know, and again, I don't pass judgment. Long before I became a middle-aged businessman and was plotting on retirement, I've done my share of financial folly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but yeah, good piece of content there. And shout out to the Gannett. And if you guys have never read it, and you want some inspiration, not just if you're in the apparel business, but if you're just a brother, truly the Damon John story and how those guys built FUBU. I know FUBU's had its turn here in America, but it's still one of the most popular lines in Asia and in Europe. Check out Damon John's book, The Display of Power. So shout out to the FUBU family. For us, by us, we need another FUBU line in our culture.
Yeah, big time. We haven't had a good urban urban line, you know, graces in a while.
It's been a minute.
Or at bare minimum, a resurgence of one that was huge. I mean, Sean John never really went away.
No, Puff had transitioned it to a really more high-end. He stopped the oversaturation. I think he learned from FUBU.
Yeah.
He never, like, started discounting. You still can't find Sean John at the Foreman Mills. You're not going to find new Sean John at Foreman Mills or any of the discounts and commercials. No. He kept some exclusivity.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it happened. It happened. It was a time.
It was a time. Shout out to the field marshal.
Shout out. Yeah. And, I mean, it's like, because when I think about, our history in clothing, watching like all these entrepreneurial ventures that were hyper successful, and then it just dropped off. What happened?
Anichi, Echo. I mean, it was on and on. Mesquine,
Fat Farm.
But then you look at the black ones. Russell,
Maurice Malone. Big up Maurice Malone. Detroit. Maurice Malone. Original.
I carried some when I met Russell, and he told me his last really venture was that Def Jam University that did not catch on. He was not able to recapture the Fat Farm success, even though his ex-wife now, Kimora, had a long run with Baby Fat.
Yeah. You had Apple Bottom.
Nelly and his team.
Vocal.
Weird how that worked. Apple Bottom was such a success, but his men's line just never... Never got there. Beyonce with House of Darion had a run.
Mm-hmm. And Vibe.
Platinum Plus.
Right.
I had a good run with a line that I just attributed to Beyonce before anybody knew. Remember that line, Baller? They had got Jadakiss.
Yes,
had
I Kiss. Do. I do.
We did well with them.
Yeah.
But no, there hasn't been. You're right, Lou. There hasn't been a urban line from our community to really catch hold in a minute.
I don't know. I don't know what caused the drop off. because there was some brilliance out of this. I mean, I think about some of the clothes I used to wear, some of the finer pieces from like your Sean Johns, from your FUBUs, and your, you know what I'm saying?
Well, just think about that era with Cross Colors, Maurice Malone,
yeah,
Carl Kanai.
Mm-hmm.
He speaks about them because these guys are hustled a little bit. So some of the stuff, they were called the Shabazz Brothers.
Yeah.
They came out right at the same time as FUBU, just tailored to Damon, went and found the right partners.
Yeah.
And I think, I mean, in all respect to those guys out there, the Shabazz Brothers, they spent too much time up on 125th Street with us.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
not enough time downtown with the people who make the industry work.
There are a couple of lines. I'll give a quick shout out to. I mean, they're more on the Detroit, on the Detroit set. I think it's one called Foreign Family.
Okay, I'm not hip to them.
Yeah, he actually, I think that's the name of it. Don't quote me, but he has a shop out at Fairlane Mall. And that's among, you know, like a generation. I'll say that they're more millennials.
Okay. And so what age group are you talking about?
I'm talking about like from 20 up to 35. They'd be familiar with Foreign Family. I think it's called Foreign Family, but you all, you know, if you're watching and you've heard of it and you know what it is, it's out at Fairlane Mall. Just tap down in the comments, or, you know, shoot me a inbox or whatnot and let me know the name of it, and I'll give it its proper due. Then you got my man Tommy Walker with Detroit Versus Everything.
Yeah, he hit a lick.
He hit a pretty big lick, and then he got with Gucci.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, it's some out there, but, I mean, it's nothing like that Renaissance period.
Yeah. And shout out to Ty. We got to get Ty. I know he's in the restaurant business.
Big up, Ty.
What he did with District 81. You know, also hailing out of the D.
Absolutely.
So it's, yeah, you know, don't be surprised one day you see my cousin there, Lip Bar, on one of those lists.
You know,
she's doing big.
She's well upon her way.
Shout out to Melissa Butler and the Lip Bar and the whole the Lip Bar family. So man, yeah, just chopping it up. So
yeah,
hope you guys enjoyed this episode 55 of Motown Mafia Podcast. Make sure
you see.
You guys got us on YouTube. Make sure you're hitting a like, share, and subscribe button. Make sure you guys check out some of this content. If you don't see it on the main station, check us out at the Diaspora Plug TV.
Yeah, big time.
And
so I'm going to send a couple of shouts out. We got a big shout out to my man Nick Speed. Big shout.
Nick, holler at your man.
Yeah, big time.
We got to get Nick on you.
DJ King David, we got to get you on the show. Big up. Petty Pac, my man, you got to come on the show too.
My man's bubbling. Yeah, well, then there it is. Then we got to put the light on them. We got to let the family know about them. And always shout out to our proud sponsors. So glad for you guys to be in our corner. To Vinyl's Apparel, located at 3246 West Davison, Suite A. Ask for a vinyl. Ask for Brother Bow Wow. Ask for my niece, or little niece, not little anymore, grown woman, asked for Kayla. Mention Big Boss Filmworks, mention Motown Mafia Podcast, mention Lou, mention Pops, mention me. They're going to show you some love. They always show love. If you're from the east side, it's still well worth your time to go west and check them out at 3246 West Davison. Also, got a hell of a lounge where you can rent out space or just enjoy your hookah experience, Blazing Hookahs. Right there at Davison between Linwood and Dexter. They are an institution, Vinyl's Apparel. Last time, 3246 West Davison. Lock it in your GPS and go holler at them people. They're going to have you laced.
Say it louder. And big up to Eddie Baby.
Eddie Baby? What up, though? RIP to his Uncle Fred. Just saw my man, unfortunately. You know, we're kind of getting worn out with this funeral thing.
Man, so many leaving, man.
So many leaving. But, yeah, shout out. Check him out at Real True Street Crimes. Check him out on Instagram. He is Eddie Baby at Instagram. Shout out to Uncle Butch. Butch, stop playing.
It's time, Butch.
Come back and see your nephew. Shout out to the legend Black Butch, a.k.a. Tommy Sharp. What else we got? Who else we got? Shout out to the great Dolph, Charles Rudolph. It's been a minute. Talked to Dolph, man. But Dolph's, you know, gotten very private. But still ain't giving up hope we can get him back. But if you guys want to know more, about the great Charles Rudolph, Black Butch Pops. And those, if you don't know, then please check out Motown Mafia, the documentary. It is available on Tubi TV, on Amazon Prime. You can also, of course, check out the book. Let me see the book there.
Ah, yeah, big time.
Motown Mafia, Memoirs of a Kingpin's Kid, available on Amazon and on Kindle. And also on Kindle is Big Man on Campus, a fictional story of my days in college working for Pops and my own side endeavors. That's available on Kindle, on Amazon. We got this is available. This led to the award-winning documentary that, again, is available on Prime and on Tubi. Oh, yeah. Last but not least,
we had him.
Just chopped it up. Got some great content with him coming. That's Getting Off Zero, Mind Right, Money Right, Getting Off Zero. Partnership between Big Boss Filmworks and Getting Off Zero Atlanta. Just had the great OG, Ray Tatum.
Ray Tatum.
On a Zoom. We're going to share some of that content. Just a real authentic guy who took a dream and turned it into a real company. He's got kiosks in downtown Atlanta, mobile store. Just a great inspirational story.
Man.
What's up, family? It's your man, CRB Jr. We back at it again. As always, to my left is my partner in crime, in quotes, Brother Lou.
Big Lou in the house.
Big Lou in the house, Brother right. Lou Stevens. And
chopping it up with Raymond Tatum of GOZ Atlanta.
Special guest, Brother Tatum. How you feeling, Ray?
I'm feeling pretty good, Courtney. I'm feeling pretty good, man.
All right, so we were finishing up the intro, and before we get in again, though, one more time for the family, so in case they missed that in the intro, you are located at downtown Atlanta, right there by the Coca-Cola sign. What are the cross streets?
Yeah, Peachtree Street and Decatur Street, 5 Decatur Street, kiosk number 26. That's right there underground Atlanta. You can't miss it. The big Coca-Cola sign right there. On top of Walgreens, 5 Decatur Street. Yeah,
What's the web address? What's the web address again?
Web address is www.gettingoffzero.com. That's www.gettingoffzero.com. That's GITTINOFFZERO.com.
All right, pull up. What's up? Put In the description, some links.
Yeah, put some. Definitely.
We'll have some links. Some links so you guys can get directly to Brother Tatum. He's got some great stuff at his site, and if you are in Atlanta, you're gonna be downtown. Make sure you stop by there. But as we were saying, Brother Tatum, me and you was having one of our philosophical conversations as we often do the other night, and you know, out there, we've been doing Money Mondays on Motown Mafia podcast. And even in the inception, going back to the days of Kingpin's Kid Radio.
You always chopping it up about how to get to the bag.
As you would say, how to get a dollar.
That's
how to
right.
get a dollar bill. Make sure that we can always get us a piece of chicken and a biscuit, no matter if times if times are good or bad. But in our conversation, Ray, it came up, you know, the philosophy of group economics versus individual economics. And you know, in this today's world, in our culture, so many people want to be a boss, everybody wants to be in business, everybody claims to be an entrepreneur. And it led us to say, well, what if that's what you want to do, what is the best path forward? Should you be thinking in terms of group economics, or should you be thinking about individual economics, kind of doing your own thing? And so I'm going to pass it on to you now. Where were you at on that conversation, Brother Tatum?
Well, I'm kind of between, you know. I think we should be doing both simultaneously. I think individuals should pursue, you know, their goals, aspirations, and dreams. But in that pursuit, I think it, you, as an individual, you can expand yourself bigger as it, in collaborating with other like-minded people, you know. And well, what up? Because it's difficult to organize yourself. See, but you have to be organized within yourself to work with other people, because it's going to be a challenge. Because we're human beings, we doing a lot of different thinking, but to get on the same page, that's going to be difficult. But group economic, individual economic, I think we should be doing both simultaneously. Now, Courtney, I appreciate your insight. Lou, appreciate your insight. Now, y'all talk to me about what y'all think so I can see something else.
All right. So first I'm going to ask you a kind of rhetorical question. You have heard the phrase said that a slave cannot serve two masters.
Right.
Now, to me, when I hear that you cannot serve two masters, something got to be a priority. I can't work just as hard for Mr. A and then work just as hard for Mr. B. Because if I try to do that, I'm not going to do either well. Something going to suffer. As we say that, you know, there's only 24 hours in a day, right? Let's assume that 8 of those hours we're sleeping. Another 2 of those hours we're preparing to eat and get ready to cometh and goeth from our occupation, our hustle, our grind, whatever we're doing. So now that's 10 hours out today already committed for. That leaves us 14 hours in the day. Now, if I put 14 hours into one thing or 7 hours each into 2 different things, I tell people all the time, Ray, you know, I'll be up, as you know, we talk at 2-3 in the morning, and I'll be working, I'll be thinking, I'll be brainstorming. I've always thought to myself, how the competition really going to compete with me when they sleep and I'm working? Over time, I'm going to win because I'm putting in more hours, I'm putting in more time, and time and energy ends up with results. So to me, that's a long way of saying, if I want to do something on my own, I can. But if I had me, you know, Lou, me and Lou, when we started this thing 11 years ago, right? Mm-hmm. It was my kind of brainstorm, right? I very quickly saw, the value that Lou was bringing to my idea. But more importantly than that, what I saw was this thing cannot make it to where it needs to be if Lou ain't all in.
Right. And you figure when I came into this thing, I had this insane notion that I could do businesses on my own. I had this lone wolf.
It was the name of you had an email that right. was called Lone Wolf, which
right.
on that joke, Ray, you got to know when he sent me an email and it said Lone Wolf
Detroit,
I was like terrified because I knew where that mindset had to be.
Right, right.
To be Lone Wolf meant, you're going to be the president, vice president, janitor, custodian, communication secretary. You're going to do it all. You don't want no help.
And what's funny, after listening to you, Ray, talk about your first t-shirt made, I quickly realized, like about a year into doing t-shirts, that I can't do this stuff by myself. I can try to do it by myself, but I'm a quickly burn out. At the time, my child's mother was helping me press shirts and do all this, that, and the third, and helping me with the business end of it. But for the most part, when I met Courtney, it really forced me to think differently and outside of the box. Because I was making these t-shirts and I started seeing t-shirts just like the ones I was making. And then you came to me, you called me up. I'll never forget it. I'm in front of the house. You was like, hey, I want you to show me how to do this. What the fuck you mean you want me to show you how to do this? This is my bread and butter. You know, I wasn't mature enough at the time to say, Yeah, let's do, you know, but then I started thinking, I was like, well, he's been stand up this whole time. Why not? I mean, let me give it a shot.
And of course, that led to you running the entire t-shirt operation for the operation.
Exactly. It was a moment where I realized if I do have, like you said, an idea that I can take it so far, but at a certain point, the group must begin to take.
Absolutely.
You had getting off zero, right? Yeah. And that first person gave you money for that idea. The first t-shirt I ever sold, it was, I don't know, Samuel Jackson or something like that. Jackie Brown or something. It was a t-shirt I made and I thought it was pretty clever. And somebody said, hey, where you get that shirt at? And it blew my mind. I'm like, I did it. And he's like, I want one. And I sold it to him for $30. And it was like the first one I ever did. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. And that feeling nothing, but you know, I wasn't thinking ahead like, wow, I could be doing shirts, going to the magic show. I could be going to trade show. I'm just thinking tunnel vision. And that's the dangerous part about when we start to get in the business. We don't reach out, not all of us, obviously, but I know myself, I'm thinking, I can do this, and I'm just trying to figure out how to do this, tunnel vision. And it really didn't work all the way for me for my particular venture at that time because I was just thinking, how can I do it myself?
Let me ask you, Luke, in retrospect, mm-hmm. was it because you were really still in a create a hustle mindset as opposed to create a business?
To be honest with you, I didn't know the difference at the time. At the time, I'm thinking I have these great ideas. I'm really discovering myself creatively and I'm making a couple of bucks off of it. So I guess you could call it a hustle mentality. And I saw the name and I knew about branding and I'm like, okay, I want to brand this name. I want to do this. But as far as the definition of a business compared to hustling, compared to like just being employed, I didn't know the difference at that time.
So I think in our community, because we like don't understand the difference between being self-employed and having a business.
Mm-hmm.
And that sometimes in an enterprise, you are self-employed. And then sometimes, so for instance, you know, I'm in the cannabis business. We have a dispensary, right? When I'm in the dispensary, I'm self-employed because I actually am there working, right? Well, today I didn't go to the dispensary. My employees did the open the close. I have a business today because I made money and I didn't have to be there or do anything related to it. I don't know if you or Lou, when you guys first started your t-shirts endeavors, thought about, I can't be making a t-shirt and selling a t-shirt at the same time, right? You can't be on Buford Highway sourcing t-shirts and at Decatur Mall trying to get a new account at the same time.
That's right. Right.
That means we got to bring some other people involved in.
Got to bring some.
Absolutely. Others. And you let me jump in here. But you know, Courtney, you know, and I was listening at Lou, and he said, well, at the time, I didn't know. See, it's been an evolving thing for me too, Lou. I had no computer skill. I had no idea about computers, that kind of thing. But as a result of the desire to say, okay, I like this getting off zero thing, and what am I going to do with it? So I said, I didn't go to school. I just started.
And I say this with all respect, for someone your age, because you are like so much more technical savvy than me. You did what I did not do. You didn't run from the technology because of lack of familiarity. You've embraced the technologies.
Right. Yeah, because listen, man, Courtney. And I want to say this. See, but Courtney, the way I see you and just listening to you and interacting with you. See, in other words, Courtney, there's some men on this planet can do several different things at one time. Now listen, they call them CEOs. They run big big companies. And what they do, they come to a board. They come to a board and listen to a whole group of other people. They listen, and then they begin to instruct all of those people.
So, okay, you met me after we had really had our retail thing established. And I'm telling this story, I think you've heard it from me, really established, and we had become major players in the retail space here in the Detroit area by the time I got to Atlanta. And, you know, I didn't want to come down there braggadocious telling people in Atlanta, you know, I already got two stores up in Detroit. I'm opening up store 3 and 4 down here in Atlanta. But what everybody did know, because my partner, a gentleman, my partner and mentor, a man by the name of Mr. William Hardy, he had watched me start with a kiosk at the mall. He had saw me absolutely clown with Negro League and throwback jerseys. He saw me go from a kiosk to a full line store in the mall. And now simultaneously, which is actually when me and Lou meet,
yeah,
we got a kiosk on one floor of a major mall in Detroit. And I got a full store. I'm right next to Lord and Taylor on the second floor. And my mentor cut into me because he was approaching retirement and he had done very well with his money. And he said, you ever think about taking on a partner? He had already spoke to his accountant. His accountant told him, only way I will suggest you get involved with this young man when you say is doing this is if he gives you some equity. And at your stage of the game, Mr. Hardy, if you can't get 50% equity in the enterprise, me as your CEO will tell you don't do the deal. But if he's willing to give you for a cash infusion, if Mr. Brown is willing, if you give him X amount of dollars and he's willing to sign you up and we do the paperwork and he's willing to give you 50% of Hall of Fame, then I think you should do it. My mentor approached me. I've raised money and gone to family and friends to do numerous ventures. But on this one, the money came to me. The money saw what we was doing and the money said, I want to be involved. And I'll be honest, I had not thought about taking on a partner, or at least at that juncture, I had not thought about taking on a partner. When he hit me and I start playing with the numbers, I'm like, with some more capital, I can open up a kiosk at Northland, Eastland, Southland. Maybe we can open up it. Having a large influx of capital was going to allow us to take the thing. We decided instead of doing expanding more locations, we could make the location we had even more. We went and bought top of the line press materials, which allowed Lou to we were able to create what we call BNC T-shirt company housed within Hall of Fame, which was Bill and Courtney's T-shirt company. Talented brother like Lou, once we gave him the right equipment. But I couldn't have done all that without finding a partner. Then when I bring in a partner, I'm bringing in all of his resources. He was a principal for 30 years. So he knew people in education who would need T-shirts. He had credibility. He's good with handling money, better than me. So all of a sudden now, worrying about paying, here's DTE and Atlanta be Georgia Power, the phone bills, the labor, the payroll, all of that stuff took off my plate, right? Because now I got a partner. I ain't worrying about paying a bill. If the lights is due, if the water is due, if the tax is getting paid, he's got all that. So what's that allow me to do? Now I'm on planes to China. Because the shop going to run. Mr. Hardy got that.
Yep.
I got a good man running the point. I got Lou. So by bringing in these people, it freed us up to take our thing to a whole different level.
Yeah.
That I just could never have done by myself.
And when you watch a dynamic like that, when you see it firsthand, I remember meetings I never really was privy to the meetings, but I knew something heavy was about to go down in those meetings that you guys were having. Like, they'd take about maybe an hour, 2 hours sometimes you guys would talk.
Every morning, me and Mr. Hardy would meet, and depending on what we were trying to do, right, for an hour to 2 hours, just having sounding boards to bounce ideas off of. And we were a perfect combination. He is a frugal man. You better bring crowbars and a plier to get a penny out of his hand. Me, it come, it go. We putting it out in the streets. We going to see what happened. But that yin and yang made it work.
Make it work, yeah.
Right? Because he's always going to be thinking about a way for us to save a dollar. And I'm always thinking of a way for us to invest a dollar. But without that counterbalance, I could overextend ourselves. Without his counterbalance, we never grow and never try anything new. Again, this just can't happen by myself. So, you know, when I share with the family out there, I think it's real important that people understand your network will determine your net worth.
Absolutely.
You and I, we had a pitch meeting. It didn't go as we wanted, but it's just a show. I never could have gotten in a room with DJ Toop. DJ Toop is the DJ.
T.I., right?
Mm-hmm. I'm new to Atlanta. I don't know these people. To even have the opportunity to pitch an idea, me and Ray went to him because we ended up taking GLZ over to China and getting some samples made.
Mm-hmm.
But he introduced me to his network.
Yeah.
He ended up doing some business with my man, Mr. Choi.
Okay.
So now he's got access to my network.
Mm-hmm.
But I can't get access to his network. He can't get access to my network if we're not in some form of partnership and having some commonality.
Mm-hmm.
And we never did formal partnerships, but we've done ventures together, whether it was meeting up in Washington, D.C.
Mm-hmm.
in 2015 for the Million Man March,
yep.
You know, a getting off zero Big Boss collaboration.
Absolutely.
I carried Ray's merchandise at my Union City store and at my Memorial Drive Decatur store.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know what I mean? But in retrospect, I'll be honest, Ray, if I had it to do all over again in my entrepreneurial career, I would seek partnerships before I even began.
Boy, that's, you know what? I'm inclined to go with you on that, Courtney. Because listen at what happened, man. Our chance meeting got me here.
See?
You understand what I'm saying? Our chance meeting got me here.
And got a book that's available on Amazon, on GOZ website, and on bigbossfilmworks.com. Getting Off Zero, Starting Point of One's Goals, Aspirations, and Dreams, which has Ray's full bio in it, my bio. And again, this chance meeting.
That's right. That's what happened.
That will outlast all of us.
Yeah.
Then I get a chance to meet Lou, the technical man.
Hey.
You understand? I was talking to some people today, man, earlier, and we was talking about Courtney. Success, and he said something about Steve Jobs said the success is in the journey. He said that the success is in the journey, and you can't do this stuff unless you like it.
No, you better believe it.
You can't do it unless you like it. You know what I mean? So, yeah, I agree with you 100%. And me and you done talked about this. And I had some recent experience down to the kiosk and dealing with some people and saw how valuable the partnership is. And I learned a big lesson in that regard, you know, and about leadership and forming good, sound relationships. You know what I mean? I'm still in this process of learning. You know what I mean? And forming good relationships is extremely important.
I mean, I don't know if there's anything more important. You know, years ago when I met Mr. Choi.
Mr. Choi, yeah.
And he said to me, Mr. Brown, and I say this with all not attempting to mock the Asian dialect. I'm just attempting to put everybody in the place because he has a heavy, very heavy Asian accent. And he says, ah, Mr. Brown, in this relationship, there will be times you don't need merchandise, but you still must order from me. In times you will need merchandise, but you won't have money. I must supply you. Do you, and he said it, and maybe that was like in 05, 04 when he says this to me. And then fast forward two Christmas seasons later, we in a cash flow crunch. I'm out in New Jersey. His warehouse is in New Jersey. And he sees me kind of hesitant picking out things. And he says to me, I told you, there will come a time when you will need merchandise and you won't have money. I must supply you. And I told you, when you didn't need merchandise, you still must order from me. He says, I remember this summer, you did not need more caps, but you kept buying from me. I knew you had too much inventory, but you kept buying. Now, ah, Mr. Brown, I see Christmas season coming. You have many expenses, many transportation. You have had break-in and robbery at your store. You don't have money for Christmas season. Ah, but I must help you. You take what you want.
Yeah.
That's relationships. There's not there's not a price you can put on that.
Mm-hmm.
Right, right.
There's no contracts. There's no lawyers.
Right. And, you know, listen, man, and, you know, to me, these assets, these character assets can only be acquired through practice and living experience.
Mm-hmm.
You understand what I'm saying, man? And I say this all the time, and I do have some regrets because I got started late, man. I made some decisions in my life that, you know, looking back in retrospect, took too much of my time. You know, took too much of my time. But looking back at the journey and the way I feel about my self and the skills that I have and what went into it, I feel real good about myself because I was somewhat in control. I had a desire to learn about what I was doing. If y'all understand what I'm saying, man. I'm at a point now, man, the journey just been sweet, Courtney. It's been, when I look back in retrospect, where this thing come from, and here it is, we on this Zoom meeting with this book background, and we got these cats, we got these t-shirts we talking about, we got these websites and kiosks, and
mobile store, don't forget about your mobile store.
Mobile store, these kinds of things, you know, and I didn't see all this when all I seen was trying to sell a t-shirt. But as a result of all this, man, I learned so much in this process, you know? And like I said, I mean, I'm not against academic. I think it would have helped me a whole lot if I had some academic training, but the journey for me has just been, I'm just really feeling real good about me. And
you should.
Where I am today.
Absolutely.
You should. And getting off zero, you didn't get off zero, but I don't think we've taken it where we're going to take it.
Right. But let me just clarify some things about getting off zero. It ain't just about money, Courtney. It's about character. It's about building character. Money is one thing, but good relationships, because a lot of time, man, you can have some problems with relationship. You can be on zero with relationship. And if you're not open to be able to talk about what role you're playing in these relationships and what is working for you and what's not working for you in the relationship and willing to change. See, these aspects of getting off zero as well. You know what I mean?
Let me say this to all the audience, and they need to listen to what I'm about to say carefully. Because we have some, and I get it, I've been burnt dealing with people in my community, but everybody in every community gets burnt. And there are people of low character in every community. There are people who make mistakes on purpose, there are people who steal on purpose, and people who are just prone to make mistakes. But you're gonna learn to trust somebody, you're not gonna be in business.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
This man knows more about my passwords and access to my finances than I do. And this has been so for quite some time. There has never been a penny, a dime, or dollar discrepancy.
How many people on one hand can you count got that kind of information on you, man?
One.
All right. listen.
Oh, yeah.
Listen. Trust me. That relationship you got, cherish that, man. That's bigger than gold, man. That's the success. That's the money. That's the character, man. Those kind of relationships.
I'll tell you this real quick, because I know the time is kind of running out here. I'll never forget when I started working at the shop over on Davison. And, you know, I'm really just of this, I had this employee mentality. I had the hustle in me, but I had this employee mentality. I'm telling the audience this to kind of, if you do have that mentality, try to train yourself out of it. I came to the store, you know, I came in for the first day, took the train from Canada and took a bus. And then I came in and then I was like, hey, how y'all doing? And he's like, hey, Lou, I'm sweating. I'm all sweaty. And he's just like, what happened? And I was like, man, I took the bus, took the train. He's like, we better than that. I could have came and picked you up. And not, I don't know, something like maybe a couple months later, me working there, this man gives me the keys to his Lexus for the weekend. And I'm thinking to myself, what the hell part of the game is this? Nobody gave me keys like that before. But, I mean, it was like an entrevue as to what was to come, because I didn't know that much. And I know Courtney was really, you know, he saw my character way before I knew he saw my character.
I watched Lou was working. Man, he was running a place called City Man for these immigrants. They had a big operation, 3-4 stores at a mall.
Yeah.
So again, people always watching you out there, family.
Yeah, big time.
So I'd be opening my kiosk and the mall say open at 10 o'clock. And every day his store that he's running is maybe 20 feet from me. So I'm like, wow, these immigrants trust this brother to open up for them every day. And I saw he was always on time. I saw how they would let him, he was opening and closing sometimes. And I already made the play. I was like, oh, we got to put him on the team. You know, so you're right. And I would be naive and I'd be remiss to tell the family out there that it's easy to find good people. In fact, attracting good talent is probably one of the hardest things you're going to do in your entrepreneurial journey. I mean, we've been looking for it, and we'll throw it out to you. We've been looking for a female, a talented sister to bring on board for a minute. And we've kissed a lot of frogs.
Yeah. Still waiting for the princess.
But she's out there.
Yeah.
You know, and when we do bring in that estrogen, when we bring in that right African-American young lady or Latino, a woman of color, without being politically incorrect.
Right.
We'll be able to take this thing to even a different level. But it's hard, right? It's hard.
Yeah. I mean, listen, y'all in a far better place than I am, you know, because right now, I just to be honest, I'm wearing all these hats, man. And I need that type of relationship where I'm comfortable with that. And I know it's not easy to do that. You have to cultivate it, that kind of thing. Like, for example, young fella just went back to Senegal. He came, and me and him worked for a couple of years at the kiosk, and we had some different issues, but we was evolving into a relationship, a good working relationship. So, and he leaves and he goes back home and that kind of thing. And I still want to kind of keep the connection, but it's the relationship wasn't to the level of where you and Luz are. It's important to have those type of relationships, you know, that you're talking about you handing your passwords and your keys and these things over to another person. See, I mean, that's a lot of stress off a human being.
Well, I'll tell you this. And I remember, because like I said, my mentality was different than it is today. One day, I can't remember exactly what it was. It was something to do with passwords. It was something to do with money or whatnot. And it was like, it had to do a lot with you. And you said, you know, unfortunately, at some point, you're going to have to trust somebody at some point. That kind of thinking, you know what I'm saying? I mean, like we just said earlier, you're going to get burnt at some point, but eventually that click will happen.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Unless you want to always stay at a hustle and never have a business.
Exactly.
I have to assume that those good people up the way have handled my money responsibly at my shop up the way, right? They've got pounds of my inventory, money. Somebody, they can't have access to all the safes, but they got access to enough. But I ask people all the time, because in our community, we don't often think. I say, you know, how much money does the average 18-year-old girl working at McDonald's handle every day? Those cashiers at McDonald's are handling $10,000, $20,000 a day. Now, there's all kinds of safety mechanisms and cameras and protocols, but that doesn't take away the fact that you can't have multiple businesses if you would think you got to be the one who collect every dollar and count every dollar.
Yeah.
No, that ain't going to work.
That's not even
it's possible. It's only so far you can go.
Right.
That's it.
So we're going to have to. Man,
we as a people, man, I don't know whether it's not that it can't be done. Why is it so much of a challenge for us to get on that page?
Well, I'm going to give you two examples because we're going to have to shut this down. But this was a great part one, Brother Tatum. I thank you so much. But let me just think, because in another post, we're going to talk about FUBU. FUBU was started with four brothers. Great book. The most famous guy is the guy Damon Johns, who's on Shark Tank now, but built a $1 billion clothing company. But Damon Johns didn't do it by himself. He had three other guys. It was his idea, but he had three other guys who saw early when he was just selling caps and t-shirts at a flea market. Three brothers pulled their talents with him and they built that $1 billion brand. Mm. And then people often forget Jay-Z's foundation was started with a partnership with him, Dame Dash, and Cameron Biggs. There were three people who laid the foundation for Rockefeller Records, which laid the foundation for Jay-Z to be where he is now. So just to examine two of the biggest iconic things that our community and our culture have ever created, those are all partnerships. Mm-hmm. None of those were individual activities. And I think people should remember that. Yeah. When you look at Jay-Z, remember he started off in a three-way partnership. When you see Damon Johns on Shark Tank and he's throwing $20 million at a deal, $10 million at a deal, and he's not even blinking his eye, that he had three other partners when they got him to that point.
And he learned a big lesson. Because he owned Shark Tank, that's what he's on Shark Tank, being
this great inspirational story.
The man's a national treasure.
National treasure, and yes, Purple Heart recipient.
Absolutely,
and a war hero,
big time.
So, Shout out to Ray Tatum. So, you good, Luke?
Good. Check me out, Flyers Plus Graphics at Instagram. And there's a whole lot of stuff about the bubble. We got the much-awaited Making of the Mafia coming next month with Patreon.
They're going to come after you. You don't drop that, Lou.
Man, don't hurt me. Don't hurt
me. It's going to be trouble.
Don't hurt me.
It's going to be trouble in the hood.
It's coming, man. We got the hell of an entrepreneurial journey with Making of the Mafia.
It is just as compelling as the actual story of Pops and Eddie in its own different way, because as we sit here now doing this pod, when we were just on French Roll, shout out to the homie Al Prophet. We just did some great work together. Always good when Al comes to town. We got to get out to California and take advantage of what he's doing over at American Dope. From us doing that with Al on French Roll just last week, to him shooting Motown Mafia on Brush and Erskine 11 years ago.
Man, come on.
And all that has transpired. And then it just sent us back when me, you, and Al were out at Cali at the when we were winning Best True Crime Documentary.
Best True Crime, right.
I'm a pimp. We'll let you guys in on this. This was a crazy thing at this film festival. And Lou will go into in Making of the Mafia. Stuart Austin and the crooks at IDT.
ITN, to be exact.
ITN Distribution and all of that. But it was, you know what? It was an expensive lesson, but I think it was worth it.
Absolutely.
And again, though, just where this project has come with all that stuff, whether it was Al in LA as we won, that award, or us down in Atlanta with DJ. Shout out to DJ Taxi again. Was here when it all
big day taxi
one, day one or down in Atlanta when we got us press passes, to us doing the panel at Martha Vineyard when we get nominated again for one of the best true crime documentaries. It's just it's been a journey, man.
It's been a journey, man. Big time.
Big journey. So, and the journey continues. All right, family. So, this is episode 55, Motown Mafia Podcast. Check us out. Love you guys. Appreciate you guys. Hit like, share, subscribe. Holla at your man.
Peace.